Are you sick and tired of watered-down talk radio?
Right back.
Listen to WS Radio. WSRadio.WS. The worldwide leader in Internet talk.
Hi, we're back. This is Jacqueline Marcel, the author of Elder Rage, and your host for Coping with Caregiving. We've got on the line now Dr. Cherry Emerson. She's a PhD in criminal and medical anthropology from Colorado. And in 1976, Dr. Emerson was a founder of the first private prison in the United States to contract with the Bureau of Prisons. She inspected locked facilities, which later on prepared her to evaluate and judge facilities during her mother's mother's descent into Alzheimer's. And she's here to discuss her insights for evaluating care facilities. So, Cherry, tell us what happened.
Well, my mother had the normal descent into Alzheimer's. Hers was MID, multi-infarct dementia, which means that you go down in stair-step decline as opposed to a lower, just straight graph. So I had to make a decision to move her into a locked unit sooner than I had anticipated. There's a big difference between locked units and assisted living units.
Oh, yes. Now, explain that so everybody knows.
There are three main differences. The first is the freedom to leave. A locked Alzheimer's unit is just that. You're locked. Outer doors may be deadlocked or have keypads to access for entry and exit. Generally, even visitors or caregivers must buzz or ring. The second difference is anytime you restrict a person's freedom, you need legal authority to do so. States will vary, but in Colorado, you need an authorizing physician to sign a document that such basic, it's technically incarceration, is necessary. The third is that this may be the last placement for the individual in late, moderate, or severe stages of Alzheimer's. An exception is hospitalization on emergencies, but if your loved one becomes combative, they may even ask you to remove them from that facility. So it's really important to work with your physician to try to control these kind of outbursts with medication as opposed to putting another move on the person you care about.
Mm-hmm. And what should a person ask? What should they look for before they sign a contract to one of these places?
Well, I think there are five things that you should consider. First, you make an appointment to tour, have a meal at the facility. Evening meals are good because the normal day staff is gone and you can see the interaction between the secondary shift and the patients.
Good idea.
Second, get a copy of all the paperwork you'll be signing. Remember, the people you are talking to are marketers. Their job is to fill the facility. If they balk at giving you the paperwork, tell them you'll pay the cost of reproduction.
Oh, good idea.
Take it home, read it, make sure you understand it. Third, ask what local, state, or federal officials oversee the facility and get names and addresses of where they can be reached. Contact these inspecting agencies to see if there are any basic black marks against the facility, regardless of how beautiful it is inside, concerning care of the patients. Fourth, ask about their staffing patterns. And that's how many employees, how many are a minimum on a night shift, how many of those night shift are caregivers, for example. And then when you find out the staffing pattern, ask them if there are any vacant positions, because they may tell you, well, we have a staffing pattern of four people on the midnight to 8 o'clock in the morning shift. But if you ask how many of those positions are vacant, they may tell you three.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Fifth, ask how they screen their employees. Do they do background checks? If so, what kind, and do they do criminal background checks? And what agencies do they go through? There are other questions that you would ask as you get closer to signing a contract. But this should let them be put on notice that you just didn't fall off the turnip truck.
Right.
That you know what you're looking for and that you're looking for a quality facility.
And also you want to check, isn't this correct also, you know, did they check in the county, in the whole state, in the whole country? How far did they check and how many years back did they check? Oh, we checked a whole year ago.
That's right.
You know, or was it 10 years we checked?
As an example, in Colorado, each county keeps their own statistics right now. So if you lived in Denver County, you'd have to check Denver. If they'd ever been in Boulder County, you'd have to check Boulder. And then some things may be a state crime, and then it would be in the Colorado computer. But the big one you want to ask about is NCIC.
So
that is the National Computer Check.
Uh-huh.
NCIC.
Okay.
That little buzzword will let them know you know what you're talking about.
And, you know, to say, oh, could you give me that in writing?
Yes.
They won't give it to you in writing. Uh-uh.
That's correct.
Oh, excellent, excellent points. You know, I get this one all the time. People ask me, but how, if you've got to move your loved one from an assisted living, you know, into an Alzheimer's locked unit, how do you do that transitionally?
This is a difficult question. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's difficult. I think that moving from assisted living may be easier than moving from a home to an Alzheimer's facility, because the subject of moving has already been breached and completed. So I'd like to look at those separately.
Good idea.
If it's assisted living, you and your staff will have witnessed the decline of the acute patient. You'll know when assisted living is no longer appropriate, and the facility itself may suggest that it's time and have facilities that you could look at. Some of the things that assisted living can't handle are wandering, short-term memory loss, difficulty with day-to-day activities. Those are some clues.
Mm-hmm.
You might even take your loved one on a short visit to the facility under the guise of stopping to visit a friend and even have dinner in the facility. If it's home to an Alzheimer's unit, it's difficult. But by this time, the person that is being placed in that facility probably will have short-term memory loss. I don't think it's wrong to not be exactly truthful. I'm a firm believer in that it isn't always necessary to tell the truth in situations where the truth could cause trauma and confusion, and Alzheimer's experts agree on this.
I agree with you.
So you can say something like, we're going to stay someplace else for a few days. Even if they think it's a hotel. My mother, in the last stages, actually in her Alzheimer's unit, I was watching her sleep, and she reached over in her sleep, picked up the phone, and said, please, one orange juice, one toast, and please remove these dishes.
Good for her.
You know, it's okay to lie. I really feel it's okay to lie.
If it saves them pain and heartache and being afraid and not using the word Alzheimer's because they may have a preconceived idea of what that is, and just say, oh, you know, what I would say is that, oh, you know, your mind's playing some tricks on you, and, you know, we're going to do this now. So, you know, whatever is the kindest thing to do for them, I believe.
I believe. I totally agree. And the experts agree that it's not necessary in those latter stages to say, you have Alzheimer's, you can't think for yourself, we're going to put you in a locked unit.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine? I'm sure that happens.
Yes, it does.
And you know what I tell people, too, is drop in the middle of the night. And if you see buzzers going off and trays left out from dinner that haven't been cleaned up and urine smell and people yelling for help and nobody attending them, this is not the place you want to be.
No, and I visited about 2 or 4 in the morning one time in my mother's facility, which was private pay, top of the line, extremely expensive, and found all the staff asleep on the couches and the room alarms going off.
Oh, my gosh. Your heart must have just broke.
I woke them up.
Good for you. Good for you. And then that brings us to the next point. I mean, how do you know that your loved one isn't being mistreated in one of these places? For sure. How do you know?
Unfortunately, you may not always know. Visit the one you love and go when they're being prepared for bedtime or a bath. Look for any bruising, scratching, or redness on their body. Unfortunately, severe Alzheimer's patients can't remember how they got the injury. Point it out to the staff. Demand that they document it. Photo it if necessary. Watch for your loved one not wanting to do an activity or be with a particular caregiver. Report what you saw. Document it to yourself in a diary. If you're hesitant to write a letter, you know, fax it to the facility. I was known as queen of faxes.
Create a paper trail.
And ultimately, if you don't have satisfaction, go to those agencies that you now have the phone numbers.
You know, it was difficult with Mom because she was on the blood thinner, and so she would bruise so easily.
Yeah.
And we'd have the, you know, little red marks on her arm because, you know, you know how that happens when they're on the blood thinners. And so I think, oh, my gosh, she's got these horrible bruises. And we've been so careful with her, and she was at home, so I know it wasn't anything I was doing. So it can make you a little nervous when you go see, you know, your loved one, and they have some of these, because sometimes, you know, it can be partly that they are very susceptible to bonking themselves or running into things, and they cause themselves some bruises themselves. It's very hard to determine what's really going on, isn't it?
It really is. And you ultimately know, if you think about your own body, that you'll have certain bruises, certain places where you know that you bumped in, because it's like table height.
Right.
Look for bruises that are in locations where you should normally not have them.
Yeah, and, you know, I find bruises on me, and I go, I don't remember bunking myself there.
I always have one from some table.
You know. Oh, my God. And the other thing, too, is, you know, go on a Saturday or Sunday when there's other families there and ask the other families, you know, how do you like this place? Are you happy with it? How long has your loved one been here? I thought that was a good way to do it, too. What do you think?
I think that's an excellent idea. And many of the facilities, if they are high-quality facilities, have what they call a residence council or a loved one's council. In other words, the facility my mother was in had a meeting once a month, when the manager of the facility met with representatives of all the patients. And they could ask questions. They could, you know, demand what they want. They could ask, you know, the manager had to answer the questions on staffing patterns. And it was very good.
And I think, you know, just being the squeaky wheel, if that facility knows that you're going to be on top of it and you're going to be watching for every little thing that's going on, you probably get a lot better care for your loved one than those that never show up to see their loved ones. So just be the advocate for your parent and making sure that their care is gotten for them. I was going to ask you... I forget what I was going to ask you. I'm getting dementia, Cherry. I slipped my mind.
Oh, good. Oh. I can care for you.
Oh, you know, darn it, we're out of time already.
All right. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you for coming on, Dr. Cherry.
All right.
I'm Jacqueline Marcel, and I'm the author of Elder Rage, inviting you to check out hundreds of valuable resources on elderrage.com. Now, stay tuned for another segment. Another hour. We're going to be meeting here every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. That's Pacific time. Tell your friends. And don't forget, you can listen online on every Tuesday.
Help us lead the way. Tell a friend. We are WS Radio. WSRadio.WS. The worldwide leader in Internet talk.